Good afternoon, everybody. Mike Latimore here with Northland Capital. I'm an analyst for the firm, research analyst. Thanks for joining. This is a great panel to address the topic of safety in online dating, social entertainment market. We have a number of app operators, and we have a number of people from a variety of, let's call them, safety organizations and institutes. So I'll just kind of go through a quick highlight here of each participant, and then we'll go into some Q&A. So we have Casey Burton on. He's a director and senior counsel with the Match Group. And the Match Group is a global provider of online dating apps. We have Jeff Cook. He's the CEO of the Meet Group. They're in the interactive live streaming service, social delivery app market, social discovery app market. We have Geronimo Folguera. Sorry about that pronunciation, but CEO of Spark, one of the largest online dating companies, and they just acquired Zeus recently. So, a very strategic acquisition there. And then from the variety of associations that sort of monitor online safety, we have Stephen Balcom. He's the founder and CEO of the Family Online Safety Institute. They're an international nonprofit which promotes online safety for kids and families. We have George Kidd. He's the chief executive at the Online Dating Association. They're a pioneer in standardizing best practices in online dating. And then we have Larry Magid. He's the CEO of Connect Safely. They're a nonprofit that helps educate connected tech users about safety, privacy, and security. So I think a great panel of both people, delivering services as well as those that kind of monitor best practices. So I appreciate everybody joining today. The format, basically going to go through some Q&A here, and I'll direct the questions to specific panelists, and we want to make sure everybody gets a chance to, give their opinion on kind of some of these key topics. So really the first question I have is a broad one. It's what is the goal of safety operations? And then what do you do to keep users safe? And so I think maybe that we'll direct that one to Casey Burton if you wanna start from the Match Group.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me. We do a wide variety of different things to keep our users safe, but the real goal of the safety operation here at Match Group is kind of threefold, and we kind of have tried to separate these into three overarching topics to kind of guide our strategy. And the first one is making sure that we provide our users sufficient education to allow them to engage safely while using our product. So these are things like safety tips and community guidelines and making sure that we're presenting them to the users at appropriate times during the product life cycle. So that's kind of the first aspect, making sure that everybody knows kind of what's going on. The second aspect is trying to detect any bad actors and or prevent the bad actors from getting onto our platforms really before they can cause harm in the ecosystem, before anybody can ever, report them for engaging in a bad action. And so that can encompass a wide range of different things, whether it's, something as broad as an IP block to very targeted AI type operations that would work on a individual level. And then the third kind of goal of our safety operation is to respond to users, remediate any bad actions that happen, and generally be supportive of folks that may have had a bad experience on the platform. And so that is things like providing resources after the fact, after any bad incidents, and then also making sure that we're removing any bad actors to the extent something bad does happen online. And then finally, kind of a fourth prong that we also engage in is working with regulators, working with governments to make sure that online safety, especially in the online dating ecosystem, is regulated appropriately, making sure that Everybody's kind of held to the same high standard that we think that we've set for ourselves. So I think that's kind of the overview of what Match Group does.
Great. Thanks a lot. Geronimo, do you want to touch on that as well? Again, kind of what is the goal of a safety operation? What do you do to kind of keep users safe?
So it's surprisingly similar to the Match Group. So our core businesses are very similar. So we basically follow exactly the same three principles and invest a lot in securing basically those three. So I think this is one of the things that the Match Group has done very well, and we have over the years followed that path of providing the same level of security and support for our users. So we do pretty much exactly the same.
Got it. Okay. And then I don't know, Jeff, if you have anything in addition to that, but Jeff from the Meet Group, any additional color?
Sure. And we, you know, I think broadly similar. You know, we put safety at the core of everything we do. You know, our users are here to interact and connect, and we think the goal of the safety operation is to promote a safe environment, you know, free of bullying, hate speech, and abuse, to encourage, you know, the making meaningful connections. We look to always act, you know, in line or even push forward whatever best industry practice would be, while acting in line with all laws and regulations. You know, I think it begins with our code of conduct in terms of service, which we put out prominently. And some of this stuff is a little in the weeds, but you know, we devote about 45% of our workforce to regulating the content of our apps. We also use various human and technological resources to monitor, you know, all visual and text content, visual including live streams and photos. You know, we have machine learning algorithms that are programmatically detecting possible safety issues. You know, we have a zero tolerance policy for abusive behavior. And we also encourage members to report abuse with we believe, a very simple reporting feature. You know, I think like the others on the call, we don't allow minors on our apps, and we seek to prevent it via a combination of human moderation, textual analysis, and user reporting. We also push tools out to our creators so that they can enable their own community to become moderators, especially as it relates to text chats. And we call these moderators bouncers, and that, you know, they use that tool to help them moderate their broadcast. There's privacy settings that are part of this, the ability to block specific profiles entirely. We scrub all new daily registrants against databases of sex offenders in the United States. We also educate about the dangers of online safety, of meeting strangers in person. We prominently display safety messages throughout the apps. We don't go so far as to ever pinpoint users on the map. We do use geolocation, but we never give away exact locations. And we engage in, you know, various industry associations to both learn and push forward best practices, including the Family Online Safety Institute, the Online Dating Association. And we're also a member of Hack360, which is an effort led by Microsoft to build a moderation algorithm to prevent child abuse.
Great. So for the listeners, the first three responses were from the kind of the app companies that are on the panel here. So maybe I guess if I go over to George, who's also kindly in video here. On those same topics, the responses we heard here, does that make sense to you? Should they be doing, you know, more, or, you know, how do you view a goal of a safety operations and what people should do to keep users safe?
I think it makes absolute sense. I think within the bounds of practicality, we can always do more. There are times when technology might feel against us, but technology can be our friend in ways you've already heard from Jeff. I see this at three levels. It's about the user. You've got to start with the user. It's about the user and having a great and safe dating experience. It's about their trust and confidence in the product. At a business level, I think it's, Geronimo touched on this, it allows the sector to own its destiny and its relationship with its users. If we don't do this properly, regulators, state's attorneys general, whoever it is, will start to make the weather for us. And I think that would be a loss of relationship. And I think the third is environmental. And I think it's an environment in which, you know, you want to create, with trust and confidence, that climate for innovation and investment.
Yep, yep. Makes sense. Great. And then I guess Larry Magid from Connect Safely, any additional comments there on that topic?
Well, first thought I want to pass on is just as within child safety, Connect Safely works in child safety, but we also work with adult safety as well. We wrote a senior's guide to online safety, for example, and there's a very large section of that senior's guide that focuses on dating safety because, as I'm sure people on this call know, just because some people are over 50, 60, 70, or even older, that doesn't mean they don't have romantic interests. So one observation is that over the last 20 years, certainly between the early 90s and mid 2000, mid this decade, while the internet was on a steep rise, violence, both against children and dating violence in general, sexual violence in general, has gone down. So anybody who wants to correlate online dating with increased sexual violence is actually looking at the numbers in exactly the wrong way. If you're looking for a correlation, and as anybody who knows social science would understand, correlations are not the same as causation. So while I can't claim data that shows that online dating has made things safer, I can say that during the period where online dating has risen, safety has also gotten better. Violence has gone down. So that's an important thing for people to understand. The other thing to understand is that Connect Safely hosts an event. The U.S. hosts an event called Safer Internet Day. And the reason we call it safer and not safe is because nobody can guarantee 100% safety on anything, whether it's food safety or transportation safety or safety using tools or whatever it is. Nobody can ever say with absolute certainty that nothing bad is going to happen. What we can do is two things. We can have best practices in industry, such as some of the things that have been talked about today by Jeff and the folks from Match and others, and we can have consumer education. But even when you take best practices, I have a car with airbags and brakes and all sorts of great safety features. That doesn't guarantee that I'm going to drive it responsibly. At the end of the day, no matter how good a job the car maker did, there is the possibility of user error or user misuse. And then finally, there's just dumb bad luck. Bad things occasionally mm-hmm. happen. So I think it's important to keep that into context when you look at any online service. There is no social media service that is 100% safe. There is no video service that's 100% safe. There is no dating service that's 100% safe because human beings are involved. And when human beings are involved, and I'm not talking about the staff, I'm talking about the user, there are going to be risks. And the question is, how do you mitigate and manage those risks? And, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like folks on this call fully understand that, both in terms of their practices and their education for users. So I think if there was anything that needed to be beefed up, it's probably the education of users, getting people from all demographic, all age groups, all socioeconomic and ethnic groups to fully understand how they can protect themselves when using any kind of online dating app. And at that point, let's focus on the positive, all the wonderful marriages and relationships and other great things that have come out of what you guys do for a living.
Got it. Okay. Excellent. Thanks. So I'll just jump on to the next question here, which is somewhat of a follow-on. And that is, how do you go about determining what is acceptable and unacceptable on your apps? And so maybe, Geronimo, do you want to take a first crack at that?
Sure. So we have very strict rules in our platforms, partly because we focus entirely on serious long-term relationships. And also we have a lot of faith-based relation apps. So we are the owners of JDate and Christian Mingle, among others. Mm-hmm. So our standards are very, very strict. So we don't allow any pictures of minors. We don't allow any pictures of not only nudity, but basically anyone that is dressed or behave in a picture in a very sexual manner. And every picture and every text written is reviewed by one of our agents. So, and no picture is posted to any of our sites until they are approved, manually verified and approved by our agents. And we have around 85 agents in total, excluding the SUSE corporations that we took over yesterday, to secure that. Also, in terms of text, we don't allow anything that would be racist or discriminatory or offensive in any way. So, and we'd rather be on the safer side and then reject text or pictures, send a notification to the user so they would upload a new one or change it. That's basically on content moderation, because we offer safe premium. It's really core to our brand proposition. We need to provide high quality profiles and a safe environment. So our standards are very, very high.
Got it. And then maybe just going over to the Meet Group. Jeff, do you want to touch on that comment, Jeff, from the Meet Group? Again, it's how do you go about determining what is acceptable and unacceptable on your apps?
Sure. So, you know, I think that kind of informs the code of conduct in terms of service. And basically, we meet weekly with a cross-functional moderation standards team, and that includes executives from legal, the safety operation, product, myself. You know, and the primary focus is just to determine what is acceptable on the apps. And you know, we essentially determine that based on, you know, obviously the goal of keeping users safe, industry best practice. And then we make changes to that based on what we're observing actual behaviors to be. You know, we're actually looking at screenshots and video, user feedback, new features. Whenever there's a new feature, we conduct a review like this prior. Changes in law, changes in best practices just across the industry. And I would say, you know, our moderation standards evolve. You know, photo had a set of standards. We applied that concept to video as well. But video, of course, invites new standards. And so, you know, we take all of that into account, and then we meet weekly to guide it.
Great. And then I guess Casey from Match, anything else you want to add there?
Yeah, I don't know if there's too much else to add. Obviously, we've got a very large stable of brands. And so we do have an internal safety committee, I think similar to what Jeff was talking about, where you've got a cross-functional set of people, whether it's security, legal, moderation. We've got representatives from each of our brands so that we can kind of get a good global perspective on what is occurring on the various brands, what issues we should be looking out for, what's kind of new in the system. Obviously, with fraud, we've got fraud teams kind of continually working through that across the brands as well. But I think really for us, we've got, you know, 20 plus years in this industry, kind of living it day in and day out. And you get a really good sense of kind of who people are, what people are, and what people find valuable in their profiles and what people find not to be valuable. And so making sure that we have the right set of standards is definitely an iterative process, which I think is what folks discussed. But that said, you know, we're always going to put the thumb on the side of user safety. So if there's really ever a question, you know, we're gonna lean towards the side of making sure that the user who is offended or the user who is reporting something is always going to be, you know, taken at their word. You know, making sure that we take the right action to reduce harassment, to reduce bad behavior, to reduce profanity, to reduce, you know, nudity and sexual content. So it's definitely an iterative process and one that we've worked out over a long period of time.
Right. Great. And then I guess just on that same topic, maybe Stephen Balcom from the Family Online Safety Institute. I mean, you take more of a, you know, you take a global perspective on all this. So how do you go about sort of figuring out sort of, you know, what should be acceptable or unacceptable across, you know, these types of apps, I guess?
Thank you very much. I've been involved with Scout and Meet Group since 2012, and I've been very impressed actually with the both technical but also policy steps that they've taken and continue to adapt over these past 7 years or so. One thing I want to build on something that Larry had said earlier, and I think that we're seeing a generational shift in the way in which young people are approaching dating apps in particular, but social media more generally. And that is that there is a far greater awareness, far greater skepticism as well, for that matter, about what is seen and heard online. I think it would be extremely rare for, say, a young woman to go and meet someone for the first time without taking a friend with her, for instance. That's just sort of like so common that, you know, they would look at you as if to say, well, of course. Now, having said that, something that researcher Dana Boyd has often stressed is that there are what are called at-risk kids and at-risk young adults who will play out in a dangerous way, both online and offline. And those are the cases that, of course, that no number of safety measures will necessarily capture. Why both Larry and I talk about a safer internet, not a safe internet. Those are also, of course, the ones that end up in the newspapers and the nightly news and cause a great sensation, and partly because they are so rare. So I would just say that the steps that that the Meet Group have already taken are, I would say, leading in this space. But of course, there are always new ways to adapt to other possible risks.
Yep. Great. So I guess Larry or George, would you want to comment on that? You know, how do you just determine what is acceptable or unacceptable?
Well, this is Larry again.
Larry, go ahead.
Certainly, what Stephen said about at-risk individuals is very important. That on one hand, we cannot design any form of social media around the highest risk individual, just like we can't design society around criminals. We have to realize that that the messaging has to be tailored to the specific individual. So one of the things that we stress in our consumer education is that one size doesn't fit all, that we take a kind of a public health approach, a primary, secondary, and tertiary, that you have general messaging, and then you have a more tailored messaging for individuals that are at risk, the kind of folks that Stephen's talking about. As for what's acceptable, I mean, I think it's the basic things that have been talked about. You have a right to set standards that go well beyond First Amendment issues, your private company. So you have a right to say what it is you find acceptable in your community. So even though it's not illegal to be depicted naked, you have a perfect right to say in our community, we don't allow for nudity. We don't allow for hate speech. We don't allow for profanity. If you choose that, I don't know. I didn't hear the word profanity, but certainly hate speech. And I think it is important that you create a community where people feel comfortable, but at the same time, create a community where people feel that they're able to express themselves. Now, it's different in dating as it is in social media like Facebook, where people, I would imagine, you don't get into too many political debates or things of that nature. But again, creating a community where people feel safe in the broadest kinds of way, feel included, and feel comfortable presenting themselves. I mean, one of the things, again, I don't have a lot of personal experience with dating. I've been married for over 30 years, but my daughter met her husband online and know a fair amount about it, you know, and how people are treated when it comes to various body types and other forms of showing respect for people. Whether or not you want to date them doesn't give you license to be critical of them. So those kinds of standards, I think, are very important to creating an environment where people feel comfortable and want to come back. And as it turns out, coincidentally, they make sense from a safety standpoint, but they also make sense from a business standpoint. So that's a good, it's not a coincidence, that's a good convergence of motivations why it's important for industry to create a safe, comfortable environment so that they and their users can thrive and everybody's going to feel comfortable.
I guess, George, from the Online Dating Association, anything to add there?
Very, very briefly, when we set the ODA up, we said dating is for grown-ups. That's different from saying, you know, that dating services can be adult services. We've said no, they're out there, but they're not services within our community and our membership. They serve a different purpose, as far as I'm concerned. I think we would say to businesses, members, be clear, be consistent, walk the talk. If you say you're going to do something, do it. And I think if I had a lesson from about 3 or 4 years back working closely with Match on a particular challenge, it was realizing that the challenge, or you reuse the word, that companies can have in dealing with users who phone up and say, I have had a bad and personal experience. You know, customer service people who are used to dealing with contractual matters or operational issues may not have been coached in the way in which they are now to deal with complex and extremely personal matters. So one of the things we did in association with Match's help and help from others was bring in the Susie Lampley Trust, which is a charity in the UK that deals with stalking and protective measures, just to talk with the members about how to engage with customers when they've actually had a very bad experience and can't don't necessarily articulate it in the way in which, you know, they think they're saying one thing and we think we're hearing another. So I think we've all learned this industry has matured, how to deal with complex issues and a huge variety of customers.
Yeah, yes, okay. Excellent. Great. So a lot of people have talked about, you know, just educating the user base as a key capability here, key function. I guess, you know, the next question I would have then is how do you educate the user base on, you know, whatever standards your community has? And maybe Jeff from the Meet Group, maybe you want to start on that one?
Sure. So, you know, I think we look at education and how to do that in the appropriate spot in the app. You know, for example, you know, on our Meet Me app, we include a screen for new users written in simple language that outlines some of the risks of meeting and moving from the relative safety of the digital world to a physical real world meeting. You know, we have also a clear reminder of our strict content standards that all streamers see every time they stream. We also have a talent team that's regularly in contact with streamers, providing direction and guidance on acceptable behavior. And we also keep abreast, you know, of evolving standards for education and look to manage a pipeline of safety-related product enhancements to make sure we're at the forefront of education. On that topic, you know, we do have something in the works that will kind of take our clear reminders at time of streaming and actually make that a positive acknowledgement. So rather than just having the screen, require the user to read the content standards, at least in very short bullet form, and acknowledge every time they stream. And so things like that are some of the ways we push education to the users.
Great. And how about Casey? Do you want to touch on that again? Casey from Match, the question is, you know, how do you educate your user base on your standards?
Yeah, I would say pretty similar. I think a few differences, you know, again, we've got the safety tips and the community guidelines, and really it's about getting those messages out to the users. And then it's also, I think, about knowing your users. Again, we have some platforms that are maybe more tailored to different types of users. So, for example, on our Match and on our Our Time platforms, which tend to skew a little bit older, we've got a pledge, which is, you know, I think like Jeff was talking about, a click button acceptance that says, you know, never send money to people because that group of people may be at a greater risk of some sort of financial scam. On OkCupid, we have a click button that's about kind of being respectful, where we've got a little bit broader of a demographic and more people engaging from that standpoint, and so trying to focus there. Playing Fish and some of our other and Tinder and others of our properties are doing similar things, kind of targeted to their users. I think we're, you know, on Sign Up, you've got kind of the main safety tips page, or you know, I think everybody now has a specific kind of email that goes out maybe a couple days after registration that says, hey, here's some things, you know, to keep in mind while focusing on safety. And again, you know, like I said earlier, we're always trying to work with regulators and legislatures to, you know, make sure that people in the various states are protected by, you know, requiring these sorts of safety tips. We worked a couple of years back with the Vermont legislature to pass a law that requires online dating companies to, you know, notify a consumer who's engaged with a fraudster in a two-way conversation. So doing things like that, that, you know, really raise the standards for the whole industry, is, you know, when we think we found a good idea, trying to push that out to the broader community, we think is really important.
And I guess, Toronto, anything to add to that?
Yeah, so working on that, I think to the point, it's about the different demographics. So when you have products that target to a younger demographic, you have more issues around sexual predators and things like that. But when you go to older users, for example, we own Silver Singles for singles 50 plus. The older demographic is also more prone to romance scams, and they are new to online dating. And I actually found, I think it was Larry that mentioned earlier, that the younger generation grew up with digital, so they understand the risk more. So it's in a way easier to educate them. What we found is that actually the older demographic is the one that needs more education and is at a higher risk. And we're doing a lot to try to educate those users. So, of course, we do all the same things that the Match Group does. In the onboarding, we give them tips. We send them emails about the safety. But we are trying to write a lot of articles and give advice and engage with experts in the field to really get the people, especially in that demographic, in particular people in their 60s, to understand that they should never send money, that they should not trust people they meet online, and take measure, like take safety measures, and educating that part of the user group, I think it's extremely important, and sometimes it's actually not properly taken care of. There's a lot of focus on the younger demographics and kind of scams in general, but I think there's actually quite a risk on the older users that we're trying to address, and I think it needs probably even more attention.
Excellent. This is Larry. If I can just put in a quick advertisement here, for if you go to connectsafely.org/seniors, you'll find our Seniors Guide to Online Safety, which deals with a lot of issues about seniors, including the risks of online dating. So that's a resource that you are all welcome to share with your users.
Excellent. And I would imagine, Larry, your organization, the other ones on the line here, I mean, this is a big part of what you guys do. So beyond that, how do you kind of educate, you know, the population of these types of apps?
Well, I think, you know, in-person events are often very useful. Even though you're not going to reach millions of people this way, you tend to have a really great exchange. So anytime you can send representatives either of your organizations or of the nonprofits that you work with to, in the case of seniors, maybe senior center events, in the case of young folks, any kind of maybe at college campuses, things like that, to kind of get to know people, I think is very handy. And of course, publications such as one some of you publish and we publish are obviously useful. And I really applaud what Jeff talked about in terms of in-time delivery of information in an appropriate way on the app. That's so critical, because that reaches people at the point where risk is likely to take place. And then beyond that, I would just say any kinds of associations, working with organizations which may have nothing to do with either your field or safety, groups like AARP for seniors, various other organizations, mothers groups, whatever, where your users congregate, I think is very important.
Stephen from the Family Online Institute, anything to add to that?
Sure. I mean, we have created something called Good Digital Parenting, which is part of our website at FOSI.org. And on that, we have things like the 7 steps to good digital parenting. We have short videos. We've got tip sheets. We've got all sorts of stuff. And what's interesting, particularly in the videos, which we shot in LA with parents and kids, oftentimes the kids are actually instructing the parents. So we see this as a two-way dialogue. And one in which children, teens, young adults have as much and sometimes more to say in correcting their own parents' digital habits and offering some solutions themselves. So we very much believe in protection, but we also very much believe in agency, particularly amongst young people.
Got it. And I guess, George, anything else just add from your perspective?
Briefly, I promise. We produce our own audiovisual content. We share it with law enforcement people, with charities, and distribute it that way. By producing it as an association, that gets it out to those smaller entities that don't have the fantastic resources that the gentlemen in the room have. The next thing I would say is when we produce our material, we'll talk about date great, date safe. Actually blending advice on how to have a great experience with advice on how to keep it safe makes that more accessible to people, I think, than a series of don't do this, look out for this, don't do this, look out for that. And I think the technique I found when I was regulating the gambling sector in the UK is you have to avoid what they called othering. It's other people that make these mistakes. I wouldn't make these mistakes. Other people do these dumb things. And I think the risk when third parties, state bodies and so on, start to come in with messages is that they tend to be top-down, negative in tone, and just generate that kind of othering response. So I think tone really matters, and knowing your audience.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Good. So then, you know, there's a variety of, you know, content that comes across these apps, whether it's chat or, you know, still images or video. I guess starting with Casey, how do you go about detecting, you know, and acting on content that violates whatever standards you're employing here? And I guess both from a, you know, talk about maybe both from a manual as well as a technology standpoint.
Yeah, so obviously this is kind of the meat of what everybody's doing here, and I think it sounds like similar to what folks are doing. You know, we use both human and machine tools in order to review content. So whether that's photos, using some sort of AI, we use both kind of internal and external AI photo moderation. We've got keywords and phrases that we use and regexes and algorithms and different things like that to review things like biotext, you know, with various different mixes. Certain of our platforms like OkCupid have trusted flaggers, which I think, you know, operate similar to what it sounds like the meet group bouncers operate. And then, of course, you know, you've got the regular users as a backstop to the extent that your kind of upfront moderation fails. I think our communities have done a really good job of making sure that if something slips through our cracks, that they're flagging that for us so that we can then take action on it relatively quickly. Again, these are on the tech side. I think it's something that we're devoting a lot of resources to. That we are, you know, constantly working on kind of new and different pieces of technology that we think will kind of keep moving the ball forward in preventing bad actors from getting on and detecting them to the extent they do get on. So I think, you know, while there's always going to be room for humans in this sort of endeavor, you know, we see the technology getting better and better and helping the humans really both triage this, you know, figure out what the good stuff is so they don't have to review that, and so that they can then devote more quality time to the tougher calls. And so we've got kind of that multi-tier system working, which I think provides kind of the best of both worlds, as opposed to trying to do, you know, all human versus all machine. Kind of working in combination gets you to where you need to be.
Great. No, that makes sense. And I guess Geronimo, maybe can you touch on that as well? Again, Geronimo from Spark. How do you detect and act on content that violates standards?
So basically, because we moderate all the content before it goes into the site, we don't have like live content like the meet group, and and so in our case, basically everything gets moderated before it's even shown to users. So the cases where we have to moderate content like this is when there is like inappropriate messages, and for that we rely on users giving us feedback. So there's a very clear button for people to report abusive behavior in the platform, and then we block the user straight away. But also we use software to scan the content of the messages, especially for fraud and scams. So anyone, for example, asking for a transfer from Western Union, that will be picked up on our software. So then we can immediately block that conversation and send a warning email to the people that have been involved. So we use content mostly to pick up issues on conversations, but outside of that, all the content gets moderated before it's even shown to users, in our case.
And the moderation, is that a mixture of human and technology driven as well, or?
Yes, so it's historically has been a lot more human, and lately we're increasing the amount of automation. Especially image recognition technology has improved a lot in the last years, and I think it's improving very fast. And I think within a year, probably, it will be even better than humans. The same for text moderation. So we are using now a combination of software and people reviewing the content. One thing I think we're missing a bit in the whole discussion is that the industry as a whole. Because I think the three companies, the three operators here in this call, so the Meet Group, Ask, and Meet, and Match, basically all of us are large groups who care a lot about our reputation and spend a lot of money on our brands, but also on safety and privacy. But there is a lot of small players in the dating space that don't have the resources. They operate out of Eastern European countries, and they don't have the same standards that the players in this call. And I think some of the issue we face in our industry is that some of these small players just don't operate with the same quality standards for safety and privacy. And that, of course, puts a negative light on the industry and creates some cases that just affects all of us. So in that sense, I'm happy when I heard Casey saying that they work with regulators. I think we should all be doing more together of trying to build proper regulation that is acceptable to us as the large players, but also that ensures that the industry as a whole has minimum standards, and that the smaller players that want to come to this industry kind of comply with the same bar of quality that we all apply.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Good. And then Jeff from the Meet Group, maybe can you talk a little bit about how you detect and act on content that violates your standards? Maybe parse it out a little bit, you know, between, you know, messaging, image, and video.
Yeah, sure. So you know, broadly, you know, I agree with, you know, the sentiment from Casey and Dronimo. You know, going into video, you know, what we're doing is we're essentially proactively sampling the broadcaster's streams algorithmically and on a very high frequency. And we're using proprietary algorithms that we developed for the initial review. And these algorithms clear quite a bit more than half of all the images with an error rate that's, you know, lower typically than that of a typical human error rate. Content that doesn't clear the algorithm is reviewed by our safety operation team. We have 240 people in safety operations. We're reviewing nearly, or some days over, 10 million images per day, including 3 million that's reviewed by humans. We also prefer to find the problematic content proactively before a report, but we do see, you know, abuse reporting as critical and really as the other side of the coin from education. You know, education is about informing users so they know what the standards are. And, you know, without a good education, they might not know what violates the terms, except maybe in very egregious cases. And so, like, for example, when a user reports a live stream, a screenshot is generated of what was on that user's phone at that moment that skips the algorithmic review and goes to the top of the human review queue. And the broadcast typically is watched or listened to by a human within 60 seconds, and often quicker than that. We're also employing humans to proactively watch a subset of broadcasts based on certain logic. And regarding text content, you know, there's a lot of real-time text content, comments and so forth being entered into the stream. You know, we employ, you know, comprehensive lists many different languages that trigger warnings, blacklists, gray lists of what will be either hidden or blocked. And we also empower, as I mentioned before, these content creators to appoint members of their community to moderate those comments. But I would say, you know, we've been certainly investing quite a bit in safety over the years, and with live video, you know, we dramatically scaled up that team.
Got it. Good. And then I guess Stephen from the Family Online Institute. I guess how do you go about sort of making sure that, you know, the industry is appropriately detecting and acting on this? I guess it kind of goes to the core of the standards efforts, but maybe if you want to touch on a little bit, that'd be great.
Sure. We do an awful lot of behind the scenes work and we sit on safety advisory boards for companies such as Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and others, and provide what we describe as constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. We get to see under NDA products and services before they get to market, and get to critique those, get to suggest other ideas about how users could be more safe or more private or more secure. And from time to time, we will call our members out. I've been on record as saying that Facebook should not host beheading videos from Mexico, for instance. I've been calling on Google to change the way in which videos go onto YouTube Kids, and so on. So, you know, we act sometimes as a bit of a conscience for the industry, mm-hmm. But also we provide, and I would say Larry too. Larry's involved in a number of these safety advisory boards. We work to try and constantly get them to up their game when it comes to safety. And as I said, I've been working with Meet Group and Scout since 2012 to do just that.
Hey, Larry, any additional things that you would highlight there?
Well, yeah, just, I mean, absolutely. We also sit on the safety advisory boards of Facebook and Twitter and mm-hmm. Snapchat, and work with Google, Roblox, a number of organizations. And I think the safety advisory boards are a good strategy because it brings in experts from around the world in some cases, but certainly from different organizations. For example, one of the groups that works with us on both the Facebook and Twitter Safety Advisory Board of the National Network to End Domestic Violence. And I would imagine that that organization would have a lot to say about your industry, given the fact that they focus largely on relationship violence. So getting these groups out involved is a great idea. Stephen's absolutely right. We give behind the scenes advice and sometimes give behind the, or in front of the scenes or behind the scenes criticism. Either publicly mm-hmm. or privately. We try to operate independently, but at the same time, respectfully to the companies that we work with. And the only thing I would say is that if you do bring a safety advisory board in, you try to, first of all, get those folks under NDA, which we are with all these companies, and inform them as early as possible around any new product development so that they can give you constructive feedback before it's too late. Part of the things that mm-hmm. Stephen has had to do, and I've had to do, is sort of help lock the barn door after the horse is stolen. There are many organizations, mm-hmm. including probably some on this call, that have come to us, at least in earlier iterations, with after a problem has occurred. So if we can get that beforehand, that makes everybody happier.
Right, and just last, George, anything additional there?
Simply to agree with Geronimo, common standards and a core set of standards. We decided a year ago that we should not claim or pretend that we were an enforcement body for the membership or for the sector. We're about standards, and it's then about how people adopt or adapt those, or how we reflect what, you know, businesses such as those on this call are already doing. Mm-hmm. Certainly domestically here in the UK, we see a lot of law enforcement people saying, you know, in the media, for example, the ODA badge is part of the test of, you know, are you taking your responsibility seriously? So I think that's important that the sector works together on the standards. There will be the need in circumstance for lawmakers to make law. But if we do this right, we limit the need for that kind of, you know, intrusion or interference to that which is genuinely necessary.
Yeah. Great. So shifting gear a little bit, but this will be for Jeff from the Meet group, I guess, to start. Next question is, most people that get these apps, they start by downloading it from Apple or Google Store, let's say. So I guess maybe, Jeff, what's your relationship with Apple and Google? You know, how does the process work to submit an app build with these guys? And then, how do you take into account sort of the app distribution partner standards also in your sort of safety operation?
Sure. So, we have five core apps, and we tend to submit new builds for those apps, every 2 to 6 weeks through the app distribution partners. Those builds are, reviewed, and then we typically release that in a matter of days post the review. We are, of course, aware of a recent short report and some of the associated reporting. We have not been contacted by any app distribution partners regarding any issue with our multi-years-long relationships. We do believe our safety practices are strong. We invest heavily and safely in safety, and we strive to hold ourselves to the bar of an industry leader. As far as, how do we take into account the partner standards and the safety operation? I think it's kind of covered by how we just interpret industry best practice and how we define our codes of conduct and our terms of service. And, as long as we're consistently enforcing that, I think, our codes are more than sufficient with respect to the standards from the app distribution partners.
Right. Geronimo, maybe you want to touch on that? What's your relationship like with Apple, Google? How does that process work to submit any new apps? And then how do you take into account their standards in your safety operations?
Yeah, so we have good relationship with Apple and Google, especially for the large apps, and we have key account managers that we work closely with for new app releases, and we release new apps all the time because we have plenty of apps for each of our brands. When it comes to safety and moderation of content, we have never had any issues with Google and Apple, and actually I think our own standards are far, far stricter than their internal policies. So, we feel like we'll never have any issues on that front with Apple and Google, simply because the way we run our current business and the way our current products operate is so strict and so strong that we have zero concerns about that this particular topic with Apple and Google.
And how about Casey? Any comments on that?
Obviously we are a pretty big driver of App Store revenue for both Apple and Google. So we've got we've got a really good relationship with them. Being one of the top non-game apps from a revenue perspective. Not much more to add there.
Okay. And I guess George, you guys talked about being on the boards of Facebook and Twitter and so forth. Do you work with Apple, Google as well, and sort of do behind the scenes advice there as well?
Less so historically. We've had a good relationship with Facebook in terms of what they're doing over mm-hmm. here. With the others, we've tended to work through the Internet Association, who mm-hmm. set up in the UK alongside the US venture. And that's been the joint talk there has been around internet safety and what's an appropriate approach to that. You touch on or will touch on things like age verification and identity checking. And that's something where we make sure that we talk closely together.
Okay. Good. And then, I guess, since we're kind of getting, just have a few minutes left here, I'll just kind of do two more questions, maybe not go through everybody. Next one would be just maybe talk about content moderation law enforcement. Questions, do you have a relationship with law enforcement, and when and how do you get involved with them? And Casey, do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, we've got a really strong relationship with law enforcement. We, have developed really good relationships with local police where our offices are. We work pretty closely with a lot of the different state attorneys general and their staff on all sorts of different issues, whether it's You know, the Texas Attorney General, where we sit, has a big push on sex trafficking right now. So we've helped and offered to work with them on a number of different things. You know, we've worked with the Vermont Attorney General on the law that I referenced earlier to try to protect people. So we've got some good relationships there. On kind of the anti-fraud side, we also have a strong relationship with the FBI and the IC3, the Internet Crime Complaint Center, and the Secret Service, all of which have kind of different aspects of the anti-fraud relationship. Kind of on a similar note, we also have a really strong relationship with NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which is the group that handles kind of child sexual abuse material here in the United States. Their CEO sits on our advisory council, which is, I think, similar to the safety councils that that Stephen and others were talking about. And so on that council, we have the CEO of NCMEC, the CEO of RAIN, which is the largest U.S. Anti-rape organization, the COO of the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, the CEO of THORN, which is a child sexual abuse nonprofit started by Ashton Kutcher and some others to try to use technology to detect that, as well as some other folks, including Polaris, Tarana Burke, who kind of was one of the founders of the Me Too movement, and some academics. So we've got a broad range of outside advisors that we work with, and then a lot of times they can help hook us into law enforcement as well. As far as what we do with law enforcement, you know, we really cooperate a lot if they're coming to us. So there's, you know, that's one way that we get it. You know, I think very cooperative with subpoenas, search warrants, whatever. We've got a couple staff who have those kind of direct relationships. And then we also cooperate extensively, proactively, when we find content on our platforms that we believe, you know, meets the legal thresholds that allows us to report out. So, you know, if we think that somebody is a school shooter or something like that, we will, you know, definitely affirmatively reach out to police and you know, notify them of those sorts of things. So I think that that's a pretty good summary of where we are on the law enforcement side.
That is thorough. Good. I guess Jeff from Meet Group. Any comments on that topic?
Yeah, no, we're in regular contact with law enforcement, typically due to, you know, a request for help with an investigation of one kind or another. I'd say, you know, we have good relationships there. We've been told on multiple occasions that, you know, we're among the more cooperative companies they interact with. We do always aim to go the extra mile with law enforcement. We also notify law enforcement if there's cases of imminent danger, cases of potential suicide, if there's a threat made against persons or properties, if there's a potential issues relating to the content that a minor is posting. We make, you know, regular reports to NCMEC. So I think, you know, that's some of the things we're doing there with law enforcement.
How about Geronimo, anything from your end?
No, very similar to what Match does and the Me Group. We have very close contact with police and law enforcement in the different countries where we operate, and we get requests from them and always comply basically with the requests and the laws in the countries to support their investigations. I have to say there are very, very few cases where things get to that point. And in a few cases, mm-hmm. we also, when we see content that meets the criteria, then or situations, we call the law enforcement ourselves. And we had a similar case to what Jeff described, where there was a user that called us to customer care, and we thought he was at high risk of suicidal. And then we called police to support, and nothing happened there. But those are very rare cases. I think that was one of those things we mentioned earlier, that when something happens, then it becomes very visible in the media. But I have to say, given the millions of users we register every month, it's surprisingly low the amount of cases that that actually escalate and involve law enforcement agents.
Right. I'll just do a couple of real quick questions because we're about a minute over time here. But the next question is, do you think you will spend more, the same, or less on safety next year? Maybe just a real quick answer, Geronimo.
So I'm not sure it's about money. I think it's about what we do, and I think we will do even more next year. Whether it costs in dollars more or less, that's to be seen, because I do think that there's a huge amount of improvements in technology. So we are adopting more and more software that will help us with a lot of our measures and make our processes more robust and stronger. And we can potentially replace manual work with software that actually will be a lot cheaper. So I think in dollar terms, it might not be more, but in terms of what we do and the robustness of our systems, I think it's actually going to get a lot stronger.
Yeah, makes sense. And Casey, how about from your perspective?
Yeah, again, safety is definitely a top priority, and we always understand that we have to and do continue to devote real resources. We spend millions of dollars a year, and we're going to continue investing in this area. I think similar to what others have said.
And Jeff from the Meet Group, spend more, same, or less next year on safety?
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo that. I'd expect to spend more. You know, we currently spend millions as well, devoting 45% of our workforce to safety. I would expect to spend more than next year than this year. You know, at the end of the day, our mission is to be the best place to meet new people, to help people make these meaningful connections. And, safety is foundational to that mission.
Perfect. Great. Well, a couple minutes over our time allotment here, but thanks everybody for listening in online, and thanks Casey from the Match Group, Jeff from the Meet Group, Geronimo from Spark, Stephen from the Family Online Institute, Safety Institute, George from Online Dating Association, and Larry from Connect Safely. Thanks all for joining. Very helpful, very insightful. So appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, everybody. All right. Thank you. Bye.